Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Siri, tell them who the next guest is on the show.
Siri, say my name.
Just minutes after completing an order at Boxed Cab Co. in the Bayview neighborhood of San Francisco. I am Siri, and this is Talkin' Schmidt. Today on the show we have Dennis Busenitz, a.k.a. Booze and Tits. Dennis grew up in Germany, later moved to a small town in Kansas, and eventually headed west where he got sponsored and turned pro for real skateboards. He's often been a top contender for the coveted Skater of the Year award, and although he's known to go fast and flip his skateboard, he also flipped a car in Australia with Monk and Felper. After discussing the great American rock band topic, it was discovered that Def Leppard's four words that you hear at the start of Rock of Ages mean nothing. It's actually just German-sounding gibberish.
Well, the whatever mumbo-jumbo you're doing right now is not German, but that doesn't mean that you're just, like, botching it.
Thank you, Siri. Also, last week, Atlas Skate Shop and I did a little promotion where we gave away a free set of Spitfire wheels to the first person who came into their shop and bought a Talkin' Schmidt t-shirt. Congratulations to Brian Clark of San Mateo.
Shout out.
Your wheels are in the mail. One last thing. The executive director will be interviewing me for episode 50, so send any questions you'd like her to include to talkinschmidt@gmail.com. That's talkinschmidt@gmail.com. The deadline is October 25th. Okay, well, we couldn't get Mad Bum, who wears number 40, but we did get Dennis. So, without further ado,
this is Dennis Busenitz, and you're listening to Talking Schmidt.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Here we go again.
Just give it the all cars try, right here.
All big dogs in.
What do you think, Schmidt?
96 times, Schmidt.
Thanks, Schmidt.
We on?
Schmitty.
Talking Schmidt.
Dude, he's so fucking
busy. Shit my pants, lad.
Your Rolodex is fucking deep.
Are you ready?
Come on, Schmidt.
Let's hear it for Greg Smith.
Welcome back. We are in the Presida. We're making dreams come true here. We're under a nice little foliage, relaxed back with my next guest, Mr. Dennis Busenitz.
Hello.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Nice. Thanks for taking the time out. This is giving me a little feeling of legitimacy here.
For your podcast?
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're as legit as all the other podcasts.
Do you ever listen to any podcast?
Yeah, I enjoy this podcast called Political. It's an economic update. It's like this communist economics professor. But I've listened to yours.
Yeah.
I've listened to Evans, Tony Farmer's. You guys bickering about the greatest U.S. band and all that. So legit.
What is it? Aerosmith.
That's funny.
Yeah, and then we got Rob Welsh holding out for number 69.
Oh yeah,
he said he doesn't want to do it till episode number 69.
Why not?
I don't know. It's Rob and his whole deal.
How many do you have left to go?
Well, this is probably, I think we're at 39 right now. So we got 30 more. I don't know if I know 30 more people, though. We might have to go from like 52 to 69.
Well, you can interview people you don't know, too.
Yeah, just pull over uni-wheel guys in the streets.
You don't have to tell them either.
Where were you born?
I was born in Kansas, Newton, Kansas. It's kind of in the center. It's like a
small town?
40 minutes north of Wichita.
Okay.
Town of like, I think there are like 12,000 or something like that. Maybe a little more. Yeah, I have a lot of family out there. Yeah, that's where my dad's from.
So that's where you were raised, right?
That's where I was raised?
Yeah.
No, when I was like a couple months old, my parents went to Germany, went back to Germany.
Oh.
They had already lived there for like 15 years or something like that, and they just came home to Kansas for like a year. And during that year, I was born. And so it was just kind of like a little vacation for them. Born in Kansas, but raised in Germany. There's a spider on my microphone. What kind of operation is this? I'm like one of the few in my family who could become president because I was born in the U.S.
Where did you discover this first skateboard then?
My older siblings had like a banana board, like one of those old, I don't know who made it, but that was like laying around the house, and just I played with it as like a toy. But they couldn't do like ollies or anything like that, and I guess nobody was really doing ollies back then. They had it like in the 70s. I guess I was like five or something like that, and the neighborhood kid got like a legit skateboard and was trying to figure out how to ollie up a curb, and we're just like hanging out together and whatever. Let us skate with us with his board and stuff, and then yep, had to get our own, of course.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what the first like legitimate skateboard was?
It was I got like a Walmart board, and then my first legit board came from a Air Force base, and it was a GNS Complete.
Mm.
And I don't really know what the board was, but I remember the trucks. They were like the hollow GNS trucks. I thought that was the best thing in the world.
All light.
I guess gimmicks still work.
Yeah.
My brother's in the Air Force, or he was in the Air Force, and we like just went to the Army base to drink Dr. Pepper and like buy skateboards, apparently. That's where my parents wanted to get us skateboards. And they didn't have like options. These are like the only GNS Completes were there.
Uh-huh.
And, my friend Matt was telling me about how like back then, if you're a skateboard company and you got the like military to buy your board, because I guess they just do like a one-stop shop thing. They just buy like whatever 30,000 GNS Completes and then just ship them all over the world to their Army bases. And you're stoked when you get that order, I guess, which makes sense.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so that was my first legit skateboard.
So did you kind of learn some skills before you moved back to the U.S., or did your skating really come more when you were back in Kansas? Like, when did you learn to ollie and stuff?
Oh.
In Germany?
Yeah. Like, when I was, like, that age, like, didn't take that long.
Because you were there till what? Like, 13?
15. Yeah, I got all my skating fundamentals in Germany.
Uh-huh.
There's like a youth center, like, I don't know, in our neighborhood. And these five older dudes built a mini ramp there. And like a mini ramp and a jump ramp. And word got around that was happening. So we went and checked that out on a Saturday. It was very exciting. It was like in the neighborhood, but it was like a mission to get the, I was like a little kid. We're like, oh, we're going to go and make a day out of it and check out this like ramp that everybody's talking about. And yeah, they're all like such dicks. They were like, no, but they're actually pretty cool, I guess. But like, I guess it's just like back then, like skating was harsh and they weren't like, yeah, get up on the ramp, learn how to drop in. They're just like mad dogging us the whole time. And just like harshed us, and then like I guess that's where we kind of learned like skate etiquette, and we'd like just have to wait till they were just assed out and tired, and then and then we got to like try our stuff.
Uh-huh.
That's like where we learned like you don't put your tail down while somebody's skating the ramp. I don't know what the fuck's up with that, kids.
Yeah,
you cannot put your tail down while somebody's skating.
That's insane. That's like the music coming on during your Oscars speech or whatever, like you're done. Was the mag out there and shit, like were you aware of like the industry and all that stuff at that time?
Somewhat. I remember we had like the mag and like looking at all the catalogs, because back then you'd like order boards from the mag, I think, and they had like just pictures of like boards, and we're always like drooling over those. I didn't really pay that much attention to like the content. Like all I remember from the mag is like just like wishing I had those like skateboards and like thinking that would be the ticket. But then like the first exposure I got to like what would you call that, ripping professional skateboarding ripping.
Yeah.
Was the band This Video. Like, this kid in our neighborhood, he was kind of on the same trajectory as we were, and he tried to ollie this three stair and just pogo sticked his board, and it was just like, he just hung up the towel. He's like, I'm never skateboarding again. And he's just like, and he had that video, and we're like, oh yeah, we'll help you get rid of that. And so we studied that pretty in depth.
Was that like the first skate video you remember seeing then? Ban This?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it for sure.
And then eventually you moved back to Kansas, correct?
Yeah, for several reasons. My grandmother was 96 or 97, and she was having some health issues, and my dad wanted to not stick her in a home, wanted to live with her. My one of my siblings was being a rebellious teenager, and my parents kind of thought that maybe it's time to get out of Germany for that reason. Yeah, so my parents kind of like retired. I was all on board. Because at that time, it was like, I was skating a lot. Like, Mouse came out, or was already out for like a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you still in school?
Yeah.
Okay.
I finished ninth grade in Germany, and then moved. But yeah, I was like heavily into skating, and then my parents were like, we're moving to America. And I was like, great, Hubba Hideout, here I come. Yeah, it's comical now, man, but that was a pretty dark time in my life.
Really?
Like, trying to skate in Newton, Kansas.
And probably just making all new friends and switching. Like, that's high school. That's kind of when you're, like, really discovering a lot of shit about life.
Yeah, yeah. Very formative years.
Uh-huh.
And just, like, the American way of life, I guess. Rural America, like, just the need for a car. Like, I never really understood that when I lived in Germany, because you just... I guess I also lived in a city, so you just get around on a bike and bus and train or whatever, and you don't have to get a driver's license. Like, most kids don't get driver's license there. And then, like, finding myself in Kansas just being like, oh, damn, like, if you can't drive, you're just, like, imprisoned in your home, kind of, almost.
So, I don't know if that's around the same time when you first moved back there, but... There's an infamous story about you meeting Heath Kurchart for the first time.
Infamous story, please. This is, I know where this came from, Becker. No, that was already like two or three years into it. My mom was awesome, and she kind of picked up on the fact that me trying to skateboard in Kansas was just like torture. So she helped out as much as she could. And, like, before I had a driver's license, she'd drive me to the park in Wichita to skate, because that was, like, the only thing to skate, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's, like, I guess parking lots and stuff like that in Newton. And if you wanted to skate anything else, you had to go to Wichita. So she drove me there a bunch, and there's a park there, and I just skated that park all the fucking time. And then, like, two and a half years of skating that park all the time, like no pros came to that park ever. Yeah, the Birdhouse team came through. It was Jay Strickland, Kurchart, Reynolds, and Lenosi. And they showed up in like a Lincoln Town Car. And yeah, I had to show them every trick I could do. Why not?
Yeah.
That's a different time then. I mean, not like that excuses it. Like, looking back at it, I still feel pretty kooky about it. But at the same time, like, if there's a time to shine, I think that's it. Yeah, I don't think Heath liked it at all. I don't even know if he still remembers it.
You've never talked to him since or anything about this?
I've talked to him since then, but I didn't bring this up.
Right.
I'm not that confident. But that was epic. It was like, I was so excited.
That was like your first interaction with the real deal dudes, right? Or
kind of, yeah. At one point, there was like a Two Fish. Do you remember that shoe company, Two Fish?
No.
Yeah, they made shoes, and Dan Rogers skated for them, and JTMR, and they came through. So that was like my first pro sighting, I guess.
Okay.
Sorry, JTMR, you're no Reynolds.
Yeah. But yeah. He is the man.
I guess was exposed to like a different side of skateboarding that I probably wouldn't have experienced in Germany. Like a lot more transition. I never skated any kind of a bowl in Germany, and the park had like a corner pocket and bigger ramps, like a 10-foot ramp. Didn't really skate that in Germany.
Like to vert or?
Yeah, vert.
Oh, right.
There's like a speed wall, basically. And in Germany, it was like more like tech street skating, like a little bit hip-hop, I guess. And then like Kansas was like a little bit more like Hessian, like whatever, Beer City skates, you know them?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that kind of vibe.
Okay.
So just, I don't know, don't wax it, go faster mentality.
Uh-huh.
Kind of Kansas.
Just power through shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then was that around the time where you got your first sponsor?
I don't know if you'd know that dude, Lorne. I never know how to say his last name. Magil.
Lorne.
He worked at Deluxe for a while.
Oh, no, I don't know.
Yeah, he like ran the park. He designed it and built the ramps in Kansas. And he was friends with Jason Ferris. Because Jason Ferris is from Newton, Kansas, and he was a Spitfire team manager. He moved out here and became Spitfire team manager, and he like left right before I got there. We always like had that in common, but never experienced it together. And it's pretty damn random, because I mean
the same exact town.
Yeah,
and he just left, but he wasn't there overlapping your time at all.
No, not at all.
Holy shit! I didn't know that. I thought he was from Colorado or something.
And just the fact that like that town could produce that dude always trips me out too, because he's one of a kind, and I don't know, I don't think you find people like that in Kansas much. So Lauren and Jason were friends, and Jason was like doing the Deluxe thing out here and skating and just living the California skateboard life. And Lauren, I got to know Lauren, and we skated together and everything like that. And then he encouraged me to make a tape, and made a tape, and then Lauren moved out here and worked for Deluxe, and he gave them my tape. And then Tommy called me and asked me if I wanted to get boards, or I don't know, it's like I think it was just kind of like a phone call, like he just wanted to like
let me send you
talk
some
to
shit.
Me before they send me shit, and just like, hey, I'm Tommy Guerrero, and just like you know, and just like, hey, we want to send you some boards. And I was like, okay. and then they sent me some stuff, and they wanted to keep seeing footage, so I'd like kept like sending them like me jumping around in a parking lot in Kansas. And then they wanted to get me out to Tampa, and Jason sent me like two huge boxes to sell to buy a ticket. So I did that and went to Tampa. So I met all the Deluxe dudes in Tampa before I'd ever been to California. That was Tampa 2000. I was thrilled to be there. I met Jamie Thomas. That was crazy. Like, yeah, just like pro overload. And
that was like from Kansas straight to like a huge part of the industry all at once.
I guess so, yeah. And I didn't really understand what a big part of it was. I was just excited to like see all these dudes skating and stuff, and just be at that park, because that park is like a very, like, you know, carries a lot of weight in skateboarding at this point, you know.
Yeah,
I'd seen it in like 4-on-1s and everything, and like it's a rad park. Yeah, I think they were worried about me getting snatched up or something like that.
Real?
Yeah, they put me on the team there.
Oh, sick. How did you do in that contest?
I don't know.
You don't remember?
I didn't do bad. I got into the finals and everything.
Oh.
I could have cared less. I was having the time of my life.
Right.
Yeah, that's when, like, Appleyard came up in that contest.
That same year?
Yeah.
2000? Damn.
Yeah, I think that's when he was, like, nobody really knew about him. I think he was already sponsored and everything, too, but he nollie heel flipped, nose slid the handrail, and, like, back then that was kind of mind-blowing, I think.
Yeah,
I guess that was like around like when the Chocolate Tour video came out, and Costin was doing that at that handrail in LA.
Right.
Yeah, I'd never seen anything like that in person.
So once that happened, they basically just put you on. You didn't have like a test, like one of those like get in the van and let's see what you're made of moments?
No, nothing like that. And I kind of thought it was a little fast too, because like I was like I was kind of more like a park skater, because there's just nothing else to skate or not much else to skate out there, and I was a little insecure, but at the same time I was like, whatever, sure, put me on, if that's your call.
Did you have dudes that you were looking up to at that point? Like, did you have like pictures up on your wall or anything of like, I don't know, whoever?
Yeah, I had a poster up of Barley ripping in Australia. I think I had like some America poster. Yeah, I was like a skate enthusiast.
And then did you go to California for your first time shortly after that? Like,
yeah, I was going to welding school, learning how to weld at the during this time, and there was a over spring break, then I flew out to California and went to Deluxe and all that, and just saw San Francisco, met Jake.
You met him on that first trip?
Yeah.
Oh shit, what was that like?
Kind of scary.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because everybody's like really nice and everything, just like, yeah, grab all the wheels you want and here, let's go to this epic skate park, like everything's all like just, you know, positive.
Yeah, hospitable.
Exactly. And then like he came skating with us like one day and he just like started like barking at me right away. Totally threw me off, got me off guard. Not like I could have put up much of a guard anyway. But yeah, that's when I got my first cover out at Alameda with Luke on that trip.
Oh damn.
And then they did like a heads thing with me skating Third and Army,
right?
And doing like some shitty interview. I think Jason did the interview and I did not talk, and Jason just, I don't know what Jason was trying to get out of the interview. He wanted to, like, I don't know, I guess probably wanted me to be something that I'm not when interviewers are
this is
trying
like
to push it in like a certain direction.
Yeah, there's like your sponsors trying to get you on the map so people know who you are so they can start moving you into their system more and more, right?
Yeah.
And that's when you filmed a bunch of the... Did you film stuff for the Reel video on that trip?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what was that, Reel to Reel?
Yeah, that was Reel to Reel. Yeah, I just went skating with Wolf.
Did you know who Wolf was?
Yeah, yeah. I knew all those videos. Yeah, Gabe and Wolf. It was just like a 10-day trip or something, or like a week trip or something like that. Yeah, there's some stuff in there. I don't know. I can't remember that well, but we went to the Alameda park quite a bit, and I know one nollie flip from Alameda made it into the video, and I couldn't really tell you what else, but yeah. And I don't know. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, what was your reaction when you saw that you got a cover?
Stoked. I don't know.
Was it completely like, was there any thought that there's a,
no,
you were just out shooting photos?
They didn't like entertain the idea or like tell me anything about this, and didn't really think that was like in the cards at all.
Uh-huh.
But I also wasn't really like concerned with any of that stuff. I was just super happy to like skate all these spots and meet all these skaters and like just like,
yeah,
I don't know,
like you see,
get out of Kansas, I guess, at the end of the day.
Right.
You know.
So did you see the mag though for the first time, like on the new shelves, or like did you
they next dated it to me. Jason next dated it to me, I think.
Oh, so you got it in the mail?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's before social media and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that's like,
I met Greco on that trip. We went and skated with Greco.
NSF?
Yeah, because he was friends with Tim Upson.
Okay.
And Tim was like, came skating with us. Yeah, he's like fully pissed drunk out. That was like probably like his like...
That might have been the time he switched fronts. I flipped Lincoln.
I think it was.
Because
I think that was like the mag after that, with his like half face and half, yeah, switch front side flip.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I remember like tripping out on him because he wasn't really skating. He would just like
pile.
We'd show up at a spot and he'd just like stumble out and like drink in and stuff. And like, he, I guess in hindsight, he's probably like hamming it up a little bit, but like still, like he would just like kind of like scope things out and then like, I guess, just like do the whole like hammer down thing. I guess it's like a completely different approach to skating than I had. I just like, oh, here we are, let's skate and stuff. But he was like more like, I guess, more professional.
Or just get more selective.
Yeah. And I guess the skating he did is like more like you can't just like casually go about it because you're going to be not walking for like 2 weeks after bailing.
Uh-huh.
Or making.
Right. From that trip, is that kind of how you got the connection? Because eventually you moved in at the Athens house with Upson, right?
Yeah, but that was much longer, like quite a bit after that, I think.
Oh, okay.
Once I was done with welding school, they just flew me out to California, and I went on the like a big summer tour. That's when we filmed a lot for the Reel to Reel. That's when I like met Gons on that trip, hung out with Frank and Nate. Yeah, that was pretty sick. Just like skating every good spot in America. Just that's all we were doing, and I thought that was wonderful, and it was.
Was that kind of when King of the Road started too?
No, King of the Road is like 2002? 2003.
Oh, 2003.
This was like somewhere of 2000.
So you were already living in SF when King of the Road happened, right?
Yeah. Okay. And my first King of the Road was with Fulcrum.
Ah.
You know, Deluxe didn't want none of that. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. I think the first King of the Roads were much better.
Yeah.
They weren't so overproduced and... Yeah, I had a lot of fun on the King of the Road trips.
And it was across the whole country.
Yeah, it was legit. No, fucking Hawaii? What the fuck is that? King of the Road? There's no road to Hawaii.
Yeah. I'm going to have to take that one up with the burn dog.
Oh, really? Look, all right. King of the air.
King of the fucking waves.
King of the airwaves. That's you, man. That's your podcast.
Ooh. Could be my We've got a new slogan, kids.
What's the acronym for there for that? Cordoba. That doesn't make sense. That sounds shit. Yeah.
What about China Banks? Yeah, but talk about China Banks a little bit. You've had a lot of fucking good moments there, and it's not an easy fucking spot to skate. If anyone's not been there, they might think different, but it is not something you just show up and bust at. Where did you remember the first time you went there?
Not really, but it must have been like one of those trips, like one of those like first trips
when they flew you out, like let's go check out Hubba Hideout, let's go check out all the like known spots.
Yeah,
Miley.
It was kind of like a, oh, here's the spot. Oh yeah, it's hard to skate. Oh yeah, carve the bench. All right, let's get out of here.
Yeah,
because like I think. Gabe was kind of like, he's probably been there like a million times, you know, and he knows there's like, we're not going to get a photo or a clip there because it's hard to skate, I guess.
Yeah, the bar's high.
And at that point, I think it had the gate up already, so people weren't skating the ledge at the end, at the top.
Okay.
Yeah, and I guess it was just kind of like a spot that you'd like hit up when you're in that area and then just move on. I mean, it still is that. And then, I don't know, I think like, I didn't really skate it till like, couple of years after, and I just kind of had this like, I just wanted to skate spots in SF, and I kind of had always had this feeling, and I still have this feeling like that spot's not gonna last much longer,
right?
And it's like very unique. Once that spot's gone, you're not gonna be able to go to like Boston or whatever and find something like similar or wherever, you know. Mm-hmm. it's just one of a kind, and I just wanted to like skate it while he could, I guess, while I can. And so I skated there by myself most of the time, and then filming for Chichikov.
Oh yeah, the Vulcan vid.
I think that's when I drug my roommate Vellucci out there to get clips.
You lived with Vellucci over in that building that Matt Newton owned?
Yeah, on Monterey in Glen Park.
But, and Strubing was upstairs or something? Or downstairs?
Well, later on, Strubing was in the middle, and then Matt was at the top. And Brian Schaefer lived in there for a second, too.
Really? You ever talk to Vellucci anymore?
No.
He kind of disappeared,
just,
huh?
Yeah, he just kind of ghosted.
He's like in Vermont or somewhere.
Yeah. It seems like that's what people do. Come to California, just do it up, and then just dip out. Upson is probably the textbook of that.
Tim Upson, he probably knows what you're doing. You have no idea what he's doing. Very elusive creature.
I can imagine what he's doing. Yeah, that dude, he taught me a lot of things, so I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
It's always strange because people think like that he just like showed me how to party and stuff, but we never like partied together. he would go party and I would go party, but it was always like separate, and he taught me everything other than partying.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, that's kind of what I think.
What was your formidable party years? Was that right then, kind of like coming to SF, discovering all this stuff, like you're probably drinking the most and that kind of stuff and getting out there? Or?
Yeah, I would say it's after Reel to Reel came out, and I guess the honeymoon phase of California kind of wore off. I was discovering alcohol, mm-hmm. and I guess it was also that time where like drinking was like cool, kind of like it was like the piss drunks and all that kind of stuff was like not like I was really doing it to be cool. I don't know. I guess I didn't really have much of an interest in like pursuing skateboarding as a career, kind of like a lull in my skating. Partying's just way easier. So yeah, that was probably like a good 2 or 3 years, I'd say.
Was there any sketchy moments, any like times where you went a little overboard?
No, just dumb moments.
Right.
I think that's, you know, like, yeah, you just get drunk and do stupid shit.
Wake up the next day and kind of have the little moral hangover where you're like, fuck, why'd I do that shit?
Those ones are okay. I never like the ones when it's like, what did I do? Like when it's like
blackout,
vacant. But I consider myself fortunate to have survived that, really, because the city can be sketchy.
Absolutely.
I don't know. People always say I punch them when I'm drunk and stuff, but I don't think I start fights and stuff when I'm drunk. Like, I'm not like, because I would like stumble around the Mission or all of SF, really, at like odd hours in the morning, and like I wouldn't like come home with a black eye because I was like mouthing off to some random person.
Yeah. There's that one scene, I forget what video it is, but I think Gabe's pouring your alcohol mm-hmm. out into the sink.
Oh, that was Seeing Double, I think.
Seeing Double.
Yeah. That was Seeing Double. Yeah, I think, that was like party time for me, because that's why they called it Seeing Double.
Seeing Double, yeah.
And I was underage. I think that's why, like, bottles of whiskey were like the most efficient way to get drunk, because you can't just like, you know, when you have that, you know, you're set.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just passed out on the ground, and he did me a favor dumping that shit, and they filmed it, and they thought it'd be cool to put in the video. And I guess, yeah, whatever.
Stands out to me. I always remember certain little things like that. But
one time I told Gabe to like punch me if I'm drinking on a trip. We were like in Utah or something, and I got a six pack or something, and we're at a spot, and I'm just drinking my beer because I'm whatever.
Yeah.
Completely forgot about it, and he just totally socked me. It was fantastic. Just kind of confused. Oh, yeah. You're right. I asked you to do this.
Yeah. How is going on trips with like him and Jason? Like, those guys held it down pretty well, right?
Yeah, they did a good job. Morford has always been really professional handling his stuff, and kind of didn't put up with like much nonsense. Yeah, I guess he just kind of like let people wild out, but would just like not, don't bring it on the session, kind of, or don't let it interfere with the trip. Like, if we're like getting kicked out of the hotel or something like that, he wasn't that stoked. And and Jason's just great, because like he would let kids be kids, and then when they're misbehaving, he'd choke you out, put you in your place.
Jason's like possibly one of the best TMs of all time, I think.
Oh, for sure. Fucking comedian.
Great skater.
He
could get anything handled, would fix spots up for people, like could get you out of trouble. Like,
yep.
Solid dude.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of nonsense, we got to talk about, I'm sure you've talked about this a million times, but
I go fast. You want to talk about me going fast?
How did you learn to skate so fast? No. Actually, we'll get to that maybe, but my biggest questions are about Australia.
Oh, yeah.
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 How did that trip come about? Why were you guys wearing the gear? Like, how the whole thing is just like...
I was just talking about this last night.
Really?
I think at least once a day it crosses my mind. It's not many days where I don't think about that. I think that's pretty like normal to near-death experiences. But I think also with all the current shit that has been bombarding us it's hard not to like remember all that.
Was it just you three?
Yeah, Monk, Jake, and I.
For just the whole trip?
No, it was a Volcom trip.
Okay.
And they wanted to do a week in Perth and a week in Melbourne. We started in Perth. Jake was on the trip because Volcom would just get Jake on trips to like
hype it up,
bring the fire, I guess, you know, and yeah, just get everybody like, I guess, just show us how it's done, really, you know, fucking amateurs. I'm not sure why Monk was there. I think like Jake had this planned out, kind of planned out, but not really. But I think they wanted to go on a cross country trip across Australia and do that drive. Yeah, they just like invited me on it, and I was like, yeah. It's not like every day that you just like have the opportunity to like travel across Australia by doing nothing more than just getting into the car. So I thought that was a good idea, and whatever, I don't really regret that. In hindsight, though, I kind of think like, damn, it feels like kind of like reckless almost, and kind of like, like you're like almost like asking for something like this to happen. It was like bound to happen in a way, because it was like a rental car, and that way. There was no like planning, and I think you kind of need to have like
a little bit of a plan.
A little bit of a plan. I remember like him flooring it. We went to Bon Scott's grave. That was pretty cool.
That's in Perth.
It wasn't in Perth. It was like outside of Perth, but we went there. That was like kind of like the kickoff of the trip. But I was very concerned about him flooring it the whole time, not because we're going way too fast and that's hazardous. I was concerned because there's like stretches, long stretches without gas stations. And when you're flooring it, your fuel economy goes way down.
Right.
And I was just like, we're just going to be in the middle of nowhere, like with nothing, you know? What a fucking stupid way to think about shit. But that's what I was concerned about.
Well, that would be my first thought, because just going down Highway 5 is kind of sketchy sometimes, or it used to be as far as mapping out your gas stations. But in the middle of Australia, it has to be way worse.
There's no traffic, you know? Like, it's, like, desolate. You're not going to get that on the 5. But, yeah, it's like...
But, I mean, you got to get gas when you see gas, no matter where you are.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm pretty sure you have to have like a reserve tank. You can't just take like a rental across Australia. But whatever. It's kind of like, I'm happy we crashed because we probably would have died other ways if we didn't. Well, dying is kind of extreme, but I don't think it would have gone very well. Huh. Yeah, we were the Rockin' Vickers. That's what Jake called us. We had like priest outfits.
And it was to spread the word of Stoke.
Spread the word of Stoke. And it was kind of like, I think he just wanted to like have like that costume and have a good time like that. But also because he had like 60 boards and customs, they were going to give him a hard time. And he wore the I don't even know what it's called, you know, the weird like white thing on your
neck.
What
a priest wears.
Yeah. I'm sure it has some kind of name.
Yeah.
But he wore that and like just like pretended to be a priest and some bullshit about how he like shouldn't get like customs tolls on his 60 skateboards. He needs those to like give to the children of the world. And they let him in. Of course they let him in. They didn't want to talk to this dude.
Yeah.
They were just like, all right. Yeah, but then that was like the story behind that. And he had like a priest shirt for me. He had one for Monk, and he had one for himself. And we're like the Rockin' Vickers. And it's pretty funny, like totaling a car and getting out. And the first person who stops is like, priest? Father?
Yeah.
You're wearing this goof outfit.
Did he continue it, or was it like, no, this is too serious?
Oh, afterwards?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we continued it, but we just like, it's a strange thing after something like that happens. You really just like let it go. You have a who gives a fuck mentality that you can't really like recreate.
Yeah.
And so like somebody's making fun of you for your Rockin' Vickers shirt, like whatever, it's just could have cared less. Like you're just happy to be alive.
Yeah, like, and it was like a shit.
Yeah, and I mean,
were you awake in the car, or were you sleeping when it happened?
So it was like, we drove one day, and then stopped at a hotel. Those dudes, like Jake, just wakes up at like god awful hours. Fuck. So like it was like, all right, I'll get in the car, we'll go keep driving. So we're like flooring it. It was like sunrise, I guess, kind of like, or like, and I was just sleeping in the back, and I put my seatbelt on because I thought that might be a good idea.
Yeah,
I had that going for me.
And Jake was driving.
Seatbelts save lives. Like, there's no doubt about it. I would have been yard sailed like all over the place. And yeah, it's not a fun feeling to feel the seatbelt doing its job. Like, very good. You're like, thank God this thing is fucking strong, because there's a lot of pressure on that bad boy. Yeah, so I was sleeping in the back, and I woke up to like Jake yelling some stuff, like just like, oh, like whatever. And I woke up to us fishtailing. There's enough time for me to be like, oh shit.
Oh.
And just kind of like prepare.
And then the car actually flipped, right?
Oh, the car flipped a bunch of times.
Fuck.
It was 600 feet from where we went off the road to where it ended up, like a football field. And we luckily like didn't hit like any of the trees, because there were trees, and just like, you have enough time to like be like, oh okay, we're crashing, like holy shit, like, and you just kind of like, I like tensed up kind of like and I just closed my eyes. I mean, I don't think there's much to look at anyway. You like kind of see yourself going off the road, and then it's just like, oh shit. And then you start to flip, and it's a very eerily silence in the middle of flipping. Like, it's like loud and crazy and everything, but then you're like in the air and it's just silent, and then you like hit the ground, it's like boom, like whatever, like car crashing sound. I can't do that.
Yeah,
Siri, sound sound of a crashing car. And then you're like, hit the ground, flip, quiet again. Hit the ground, quiet again. And you get into like this little rhythm, and like you're just like, oh, okay, cool. Or like still alive, like fuck, like, and you're just like, think you're gonna die. And then we were like on the ground, and I thought it was over. I was just waiting for another impact, and it took a while to like be like, oh shit, the crash is complete. And then yeah, we're upside down. And,
damn.
And Jake's like, Hubbard, Dennis, and there's all like, we'll make noises, and like, everybody's okay, fuck yeah. And we all knew, like, didn't have to be that way, could have easily not been that way.
Fuck.
And whatever.
Is it true that right after that, Hubbard just like, did he just bail? Did he just skate? No. You guys stayed together.
Yeah, we stayed together. People were like giving us water and stuff. People, travelers, were like helping us out and like saying stupid shit like, you should buy some lottery tickets because you're the luckiest people in the world and everything. And like people from like miles before who like Jake just like fucking recklessly like passed, you know, like asshole style, I'm sure. I don't know, sleeping, but like I can't imagine it being very courteous. We're like, oh yeah, you passed us a while back. I knew you would crash. People saying stuff like that, and then the cops showed up, and it's like this remote Australian cop with like a four-wheel drive vehicle, and yeah, here's the car. It's totaled. Write your report. We want to go somewhere. Can you drive us to the bottle shop? And he took us to the next town over that had like a skate park, actually some weird random skate park and a bottle shop, and we got drunk. Of course.
Wow.
And we were at the bar afterwards, and then Jake was like, I deserve to get punched. You can punch me. And he took off his glasses, and I punched him. I don't think he was expecting a solid punch, but I gave him one. I mean, like, whatever, I just wanted to punch something, and he was just putting his face out there. So I was like, all right.
I mean, that's like you said, you still think about it pretty much every day. That's a traumatic experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess so. I mean, yeah. But the reason why I'm yapping about this is because we got a room in that town and slept there, and we're gonna like figure it out the next day. We were like, all, you know, like we're not gonna like try to get back to Perth and that state of mind, so we just like slept. And then the next morning Monk was gone and like left a note and just saying that like we're gonna have to hitchhike out of here, and it's just easier to hitchhike if we split up because nobody wants to pick up like a gang of three dudes. It'll just be better if we're separated. And I think he must have gone home because I don't remember seeing Monk or anything the rest of the trip. I never really knew Monk. I had this experience with him, and the next time I saw him was at Preston's memorial.
Whoa, that's like, heavy.
Yeah, it's pretty dark all over. Yeah, I remember like hit him up about maybe building some shit at my place. Some skate stuff, and he was down, and we like got like a little texting repertoire going, and then next thing you know, he's gone too.
Yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
How long did you stay in Australia after that? You guys just continued the trip?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
We just did what the rest of the Vulcan pussies were doing, which is flying across Australia.
I would have thought you would have just flown home.
No. I don't know why I just said Vulcan pussies. I just thought that'd be funny.
Yeah.
No, but we finished the trip. Yeah, went to Melbourne. We just like sold 60 boards.
Did you feel like you were on borrowed? Like you, this was just a fucking bonus round after that. Like, oh, this is we.
Well, yeah. You got like a little extra credit.
Yeah, I mean, Jake's had that probably a million times in his life, but
yeah. To me, it's like a big deal. To him, it's like
one of many.
But you know, I don't know if that's really accurate either. I think he was shook too.
I mean, that photo of him next to the car flipped. It's like the opening of the book or whatever. Is like that is that says it all. Like to anybody that looks at that, they can be like, "Holy fuck, this is like a gnarly photo," you know. And
yeah, there's like a. Like a small tree, I mean, 2-3 inches diameter that was like sticking through the front of the car. I don't know how, but it went through the like dashboard and was like coming out of the through the steering wheel. Like it was like heading towards impaling the driver, which was Jake. And just the car just stopped, like, you know, like a foot or two more and it would have been quite a bit different.
Damn, that's so gnarly. Do you have some special feelings for recently losing Hubbard and Jake? Like there was the three of you guys in that car. Like I just thought about that today, actually. I was like, oh, whoa, Dennis is like the sole survivor of that gnarly thing that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I have a weird feeling of just like being alone. I guess you go through an experience like that and it creates like a bond.
Right.
And like, I wasn't close with Monk, but like we always had that. Like I saw him at Preston's funeral and it was like, you know, I know, and like whatever, being like the last survivor. I don't know why. I just feels alone. And I wasn't really that close to Jake either. It's not like I like called him up and talked to him all the time and everything. But now since they're gone, it's like, Oh, it's just me. And I feel like some kind of like, obligation to like take something away from that experience and like put it out in the world or something, and I don't really know how to do that.
Uh-huh.
But like they're not gonna do it,
so yeah.
I'm the only one left to do something, and who the fuck knows what that is.
Did that affect your relationship with Jake?
You know, before that he would like give me a hard time and I'd be like, oh, editor of the Mac, okay.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, fuck you, like we're the same. We're both, you know, on the same on an equal footing in that respect, I guess. I don't know. I guess like a mutual respect, I guess. I don't know. Like, equal sounds stupid, but it's like whatever you're like bickering about, you can always just be like, we both know this is total horse shit, and we're both alive, so that's great. And we'd end up high-fiving, basically. Not literally.
Yeah.
Figuratively.
Okay.
I have to go use the restroom now.
Okay. Take a little break. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And now for another First Impressions with Timothy Donald McKenney.
Tim McKenney, First Impressions. Probably the heaviest one outside of you were doing a P-Stone, but I didn't know him like this. I didn't know Jake that well either, but my first impression of him was me as a child at the San Jose warehouse. Not the first one, the second one down there in San Jose. But he came in, storming in on the vert ramp, doing nollie 360s or nollie nors, cavalarios, all kind of elliptical magic. Glasses on, hair up, maybe a headband, shorts, maybe a button-up, white button-up, short sleeve. It's kind of like in my head implanted, goggles flying. I'm saying nollie 360s or cavalarios, nollie nors, all kinds of stuff, man. That's my first impression of Jake. Last impression is you're a flash in the pan, and I guess I was, so he was right. He also said, watch what's out there after skateboarding, you were living a fairy tale. He was right. It's a tough world, guys.
I don't believe in MeUndies. I've been freeballing.
Really?
I've been freeballing for quite a long time.
You and Toad.
Yeah, people always complain about my ass crack and shit. I didn't know Toad does that. Good yeah. Man.
What's it called? Rambo, I think it's what they call it. Well, I've always been a stance man. They sent me socks, and once they started making underwear, I said, send the underwear too.
That's not going to the podcast.
It's going in.
Right after the MeUndies commercial.
Yeah. We're gonna combat underwear. Mm-hmm. And then Strubing had Silo.
It's like Swiss bearings. It's the shit everybody skates, but...
But you're sponsored by NMB.
Falsehood is alive and well.
Joe Brook told me to ask you a question, and he said...
Hold on. I want to say one more thing that I thought of when I was peeing.
Oh, okay.
About the Australia thing and everything, just because it's kind of bizarre and kind of trippy. But my mom, who was in Kansas at the time, woke up in the middle of the night and was... extremely worried about me and was like, something's up with Dennis, something's going on with Dennis. And she has 7 children. She could worry about many others of them, but she was tripping out on me. And come to learn that was like the exact time of the accident. And I'm not really big on like ghosts and supernatural stuff, but like that one is always a little like trippy. And just want to put that out there.
I've gotten more into that shit as I've gotten older. Like, we're big on full moons. We feel like people really kind of get crazier during full moons.
A lot of babies are born in full moons.
Yeah,
I guess that can be explained scientifically, but yeah. I don't know what that was, if that's like just like a mother bond to her child or what. But Australia is a long way away from Kansas. Mm. Not to be morbid or anything, but like, life is precious.
Yeah. Well, switching gears a little bit.
Let's do that.
Joe Brooks says, eggs any style story.
Oh, goodness. Frank Gerber is a much better storyteller.
What does that mean?
Just means that I was pretty green. That's all it means. When you have a family of 7 kids, you don't really go out to eat much. I didn't know how to order eggs. And I was looking at the menu at Denny's, seeing it says, like, eggs, any style. And I was like, that sounds pretty cool. Sure, I'll have the eggs any style.
Oh, shit, okay.
And then they were confused, and I was confused. And I guess I'll never hear the end of it. That's pretty funny. It's like give me the soup of the day, whatever, you know, like it's kind of like just rolling the dice.
The one thing Joe remembers is that out of everything.
He wasn't even there. This is like Frank. Frank keeps that one alive. He loves that one. It's pretty funny.
That's like, did you ever,
I mean, I think about it whenever I see a menu that says any style.
Did you ever hear the one about Pablo going on the first anti-hero trip?
Mm-hmm.
Are those cloud makers?
Yeah. I'd like to believe he said that kind of as a joke, though, too.
Yeah.
They just ran with it.
I don't know.
You think he really thought they're producing clouds somewhere like that? Yeah. That's where clouds come from?
I mean, I've talked to Pablo a lot through the years, and it definitely seems in par with some of his ideology.
I mean, laugh all you want. It's not unrealistic. I mean, China, they make clouds. They make rain for their crops.
Yeah, but Boreal, they make snow. Collinson chiming in.
Love Pablo, by the way.
Yeah.
He's a great dude.
For sure. What kind of vert skating have you done in your life? What's one of the better moves you've done on a vert ramp?
Not much.
No?
Just getting up on the lip. I've never managed to like really properly air anything. For a while, I was pretty gung-ho on doing a 540, but and I was just like try to like spin it below the coping. But like just like Smith grinds and lip slides. I don't know, maybe a tail slide.
Yeah.
But vert scares the shit out of me, and I could never learn how to just knee slide. You know, you just go to your knees. I'd always like try to run out, and that'll just destroy you on a vert ramp.
Right.
And they had a vert ramp at Volcom, and I went down there for like 2 weeks just to skate vert. And
Did you pad up?
Yeah, fully padded. Just trying to
spin,
explore my horizons. I remember I was on DVS with Steve Barra, and I was always like baffled by the fact that homeboy can do 540s and he doesn't just go out every day and do one or two for the hell of it.
I don't know. It's kind of like surfing in a weird way, where you don't have to do as much to feel an accomplishment. Like, you know what I mean? Like if you do a back disaster or something like that, you're like, fuck, that was your whole session, as opposed to street skating. You feel like, oh, I suck.
Yep. That's why fucking street skating's for men.
Yeah.
Nice. Nah, that's just bullshit. Vert skating's fucking gnarly.
Yeah.
Fucking D-Way, come on. I love the DC video and how like somebody's talking shit to Danny Way at the bar and like saying he can't skate street anymore, and he's like, oh yeah, we'll fucking film a street part, and that's how all that shit came about in the DC video.
Oh.
And I don't even know if that's true or not, but I like to think that in my head. Come on. Questionable video, fucking Danny Way fucking does it all.
Yeah. Danny's, what, he back three'd like a...
The Machba.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not some little scrawny kid. That's a fucking man.
Yeah.
That's a man's 360.
What's up with the Adidas? You did well with your shoe. You did well with the video part for Away Days. How are you feeling about all that?
Spoiled.
Spoiled. You get to travel in luxury? Mm-hmm. They take care of you on flights. Do you ever get to...
Yeah, I don't have to sleep on the ground.
Do you ever get to fly with the pod?
Luxury at the pod. I've flown with the pod, but that was like on my own miles. That was like premium platinum crap.
Alyssa's been hyping up the pod since she got on Nike. She's like, oh my god, it's a whole different world.
Yeah, no, it's still fly economy. I'd rather have them buy some hungry kid a ticket to some spot,
yeah,
than like give me a pod. But yeah, I feel very fortunate about how things panned out with my shoe and everything like that. It's kind of like winning the lottery.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's always funny because in hindsight, people are like, of course, it's Adidas. Of course your shoe's going to sell. Or like, no, of course you just make a shoe like that and it'll sell and everything. But like, people aren't like that as you're doing it or right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that. It's a lot more... unknown stuff that you're aware of and people like to point out. There's some resistance over there to putting out a soccer inspired shoe. I guess I just stuck to my guns and I knew that's what I wanted.
Was the initial situation, was that when Bryce was still there? Or?
Yeah, Bryce got me on. So I owe him a lot. Wouldn't it have happened without him? Yeah, because when they got me, it's not like I was like a top dog or anything or whatever. Sounds stupid. They were like going after like Apple Yard and like PJ Ladd and like gnarly dudes. But Bryce had an appreciation for my skating. Yeah, I guess he just stuck to his guns too and made them get me. I got a little bit more serious when that happened. Like that was like the first time I saw like real money from skateboarding, and I wanted to like, you know, earn my keep in a way too. So I kind of like tried to be more professional than I had been in the past.
Did that add a lot of stress or?
No, I wouldn't call it stress.
No.
It was just like, okay, we're on a skate trip. We're here to skate. I'm going to skate, you know, and whatever happens, happens. Uh-huh. It wasn't like just like kind of like that, like flippant, just I'm going to sit in the van. Fuck it. Like I didn't do that. No, children created stress for me.
Yeah.
Or pressure.
Did you meet Snoop Dogg filming the video and stuff?
Yeah, but it was a surprise. They just wanted to go to like a spot near the airport in LA. Like they got us down to LA and they're like, oh, we're going to this like bank to wall, and like, all right, skate it. This will be for our away days. And like, and we're just like wall riding this thing. And like, it was kind of weird. Like, what the fuck's going on? Like, why do you guys want us like skating this like whatever spot for the video? And then Snoop just showed up. It was pretty rad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fucking Snoop Dogg.
And then you got the last part of the video.
Yeah.
Fucking nailed it. You and Silas stick out a lot to me as the production on it, everything, just the way like they filmed the intro to your part, like to the sounds, like, and it just started making the beat and shit.
Of the wallying at Wally World. Yeah.
Like that was sick. Who
That was such a fun trip. That was like one of the last trips. I think that was the last trip before the video. And yeah, Silas wanted to get out to Japan and skate this certain spot that he had found somehow. It was just like Silas and me and rural Japan. I'd never experienced rural Japan, and just like skating different things out there. And we just went to this abandoned water park, and they had all those like umbrella stands everywhere, and they had this gigantic pool that was empty with like a downhill. And I was like, let's just set up as many wallies as we can, let's just wally our hearts out. And yeah, just like, that was fun. Like,
it was cool.
Wallies for as long as your legs will carry you. And yeah, you didn't even have to push, just a slight downhill with ba-dunk, ba-dunk, ba-dunk.
So did that start, like, when you guys did that turn into the music thing? Or did you go there because you thought to do it?
Oh, fuck no, come no. on.
I don't know, Camarillo or whoever edits. Hey,
can't you tell by a conversation that I don't think far ahead at all?
Yeah, but you might not have been behind it. It might have been someone else.
No, that was just like editing room magic.
Yeah, that's cool. What's going on now? Like, you guys just moved back kind of to SF as your home spot more so now for the kids and stuff?
Yeah. Can't really say I'm working on anything. I have like a weird thing with my leg. It just doesn't want to heal. It's like a dead leg.
Oh, like, Joe Hobo's had that before where it's kind of like numb.
Yeah.
Fuck, that's frustrating.
I don't even understand how people don't skateboard. Like, how the fuck do you get your kicks in? Like, how the fuck do you, like, why do people even get out of bed? Like, it's really, like, baffling.
Have you dove into some projects or anything that, like...
I got myself a dirt bike. That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But, like, nothing compared to skating. Yeah, I've been playing around with concrete.
You building more stuff up there?
I want to make a... Well, if I say it, then I have to do it. But I've been toying with this idea of making Jake's glasses to scale out of concrete, 1 to 1/8, and just parking it somewhere, maybe at Waller or something. It would be kind of neat. I don't know. It's just kind of like my version of saying something at his memorial or something like that. You know, it's just my kind of like way to remember him.
Yeah.
But then I like get like, wow, that's just stupid. What the fuck is fucking Jake's glasses and concrete? Like, who the fuck cares? And, like, would it just end up in a lot somewhere? But, like, whatever. I started working on it and building the form for it. I like thinking about it on Heckle Hill at Potrero, too. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Just park it there, and the city would probably remove it or something like that. But it, even if it lasts for like a week or something, I think it'd be pretty neat.
Yeah, it'd be sick to almost do like one of those ones where you can move it around and like do a whole thing like around the city.
Move it around. I was thinking you meant like how you could like move the temples of glasses and have that actual piece like move like that, so you could like adjust it for different kind of things.
That too, but no, just like it's at Heckle Hill for a day, then you take it up to Waller, like how they did that one article with like the box, and they took it to all the spots around the city and skated it and shit.
Schmitty, this just in, concrete is heavy.
Concrete is super heavy.
Yep.
Siri, how heavy are these glasses made out of concrete?
Siri, how heavy is this 80 pound of concrete?
How are we going to get Siri to help us, like, to work?
Siri will never help us.
It's not
God, good. Fucking assholes. Get over it. AI is dog shit.
Mm.
The world's problems will not be solved by AI.
Yeah.
I am a firm believer. A firm anti-believer in AI, and it's really hard living in San Francisco nowadays because everybody's all fucking Siri'd out.
Yeah. What do you think about the dudes that are on these motorized skateboards and the Uniwheel and all those tech bros flying around?
What do I think about that? I don't know. Fucking push the damn thing. I always want to yell at them or something, but it's just like so futile. Like,
yeah.
What's the point?
What's like, the point? I want to yell at the police actually more, or like the city in general, and just be like, how come they get to do all this shit that we've done for years pushing and got harassed?
Wouldn't that be funny if they recreate that Dolores Hill bomb where the cop just fucking checks that homeboy and recreate that with like a techie on a mono wheel?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll start directing movies.
Oh, all right. Let me be a grip.
Just like Faces of Death, Scooter Edition.
Yeah.
I think it could go viral. I think it could.
You know, this is still out there. I got $100 for anybody to send me in 5 good clips of one of those dudes eating shit. I want to build this viral thing and
just... I mean, can't you find 5 of them on Kook Slams?
Nah, I don't think so. I've never seen them. Like, because no one's filming those guys. You know
I
what I mean?
So, huh?
Yeah, like, it's not like they go out filming. They go out to fucking work.
Aren't they like, filming themselves, though? Aren't they, like, constantly FaceTiming and stuff?
Maybe, but they're not going to, you know, send in their slam of themselves.
See, Siri can't even get us that footage.
I got one of a dude at Lower Bob's, though. It was insane. Some guy sent me one at Lower Bob's. I was like, how did Timo let that happen?
I guess you could, like, sabotage them by, like, stringing a line across the road and then just setting up a tripod.
Mm.
Will you visit me in jail?
We used to do that as kids. We would put the fishing line from one stop sign to the other at night so you can't see it. And just like, boing!
Who would you get? Just people riding their bicycle?
Or a car? Or just anything.
Oh, cars. Cars yeah. Just drive through it, don't they?
Yeah. But it'd be like just dumb shit like that. Is it hard for you to watch skateboarding then?
Yeah, I don't watch it.
You don't?
I kind of disconnect myself from all of it.
Yeah.
I'll like end up at like skate events and skate things like that. And like I'll see people like just skating as I'm like making my way through town and stuff. And it's you know, you get excited. You see people skating and you get like, it gets you juiced.
Yeah.
And like, it's hard to when you can't.
Right.
Like, fuck. So I try to like curb that for my own sanity.
Do you watch any TV? Do you have Netflix or anything like that?
Oh yeah, fucking Handmaid's Tale, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I feel like that show really jumped the shark.
Oh, did it?
I think so.
I didn't get into the second season. I made it through one.
Yeah. I like the first season. I think that was good. That's when it was still like according to the book.
Uh-huh.
The second was good too, but then I feel like in the third, it just seems like they're like really just trying to dig up. They're just digging
uh-huh.
for drama. Like,
what kind of horseshit can we concoct that's just like shocking and incredibly dark and bleak? You know, with at the beginning, you're kind of like, okay, I can see, like, this is still like, could be realistic if shit is really fucked up. But now I feel like they're just like, come on.
It almost went sci-fi.
Yeah.
We've been watching Mindhunter. I like that one. I like the true crime shit.
I don't know that one.
It's about these guys that study, like, kind of psychological look at these fucking crazy people. It's pretty cool, actually. It's interesting.
It is interesting. I just heard this thing on NPR, Radio Lab, and they were doing a show on the importance of play. And they were talking about in the 60s when that dude, Oswald was the guy who offed Kennedy.
So they say.
Whitman. Charles Whitman.
Uh-huh.
He got on that tower in Austin, Texas, and started, like, leveling people, and that was, like, the first big mass shooting in the U.S., and they were interviewing this psychologist who was tasked with the job of exactly what you're talking about, finding out what makes a person do this kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And the dude had a pretty, like, fairly normal childhood. Abusive father, you know, but like a lot of people have abusive fathers. That doesn't mean they do this kind of stuff. But the one thing that, like, they interviewed all the friends and family and neighbors and everything, and the one thing they said was the dude, they never saw him playing, like, just free play. Whenever he was, like, doing something, it was always like a scripted activity or like a
huh.
Very curated thing. I don't know. I thought that was interesting, like, listening to that from, like, a skateboarder's perspective, because skateboarding is nothing but playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just do whatever you want. You know, you just go over there, go over here, jump up that, jump down that. It's nice to, like, hear, like, a, like, validation. It's important. What? No, duh, people. Gotta have fucking fun.
Yeah.
What, like...
That's what I say every day. I'm like, can we still laugh? Can we make jokes? Is everyone too scared to, like, joke?
Yeah, you gotta tread lightly.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Fucking all of this shit. Social media has just made life such a microscope of failure. It's bananas.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And people kind of taking joy in other people's failure has been, like, so...
There's a word for that.
Schadenfreude.
Yeah, Schadenfreude. You pass.
Yeah. I fucking hate it.
Yeah. Whoa. You're the one who was just saying that you want to pay somebody $100 to get you 5 scooter slams.
Touche.
So.
Damn, see, you're on it.
Yeah, I guess so. I have my moments.
Well, you said if we do this before noon, your brain works a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
So we're good still. Yeah.
You're hearing me at my best, peeps.
Yeah.
But I have to share this. And in Germany, they say, it's a German word.
Uh-huh.
It's notorious for being untranslatable, so they just brought it to the English language. And it's just like misfortune joy, or like just like... getting, like, pleasure out of somebody else's, like, pain.
Uh-huh.
And in German, there's a saying, Schadenfreude ist die einzige Freude. And it translates to Schadenfreude, which, you know, and that joy is the only joy.
Oh. Damn.
So if you think it's dark by itself, well, that, like, brings it to another level.
I think we just discovered the title of your first movie. So that's a perfect one. Look for Schadenfreude in about 2024.
Yeah, that's too hard to say, but yeah, that would be funny.
Oh my god. Is Uten, Gluten, Glauben, Globen, is that German?
No. Glauben is belief, but Where did you pick up something like that's that? Are you just freestyling now?
That's the beginning of Def Leppard Pyromania. It goes, Uten, Gluten, Glauten, Globen. I got something to say. Come on, farmer, start rocking out.
The best band of all time.
Aerosmith, dude. No, it has to be AC/DC, bro, but not fucking Hagar, Van Halen.
AC/DC is from Australia. Yeah,
it's like so, dude, it was... The more beers that got consumed, the crazier it got.
The whatever mumbo jumbo you're doing right now is not German, but that doesn't mean that you're just like botching it.
Or so, yeah, like, I could be completely botching it. Or Def Leppard might have botched it.
I doubt that.
Yeah.
Best band of all time.
Def Leppard, best band of all time. Well, how should we end it? Is there anything else we need to discuss?
A freestyle rap battle? Is that anything?
Were you really in a rock band?
No.
I asked Dennis, I was like, hey, do you mind holding a microphone? He's like, I was in a rock band before, so it shouldn't be a problem.
I do love Freddie Mercury, though. I haven't watched that movie.
That's a good one.
I like Freddie Mercury that lives in my head. I don't want to have Hollywood tell me what I should have in my head with that in that regards.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, he's a special dude.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that movie might... Actually, you might not be bummed on it. They did a pretty good job.
You'd be surprised what I can get bummed on.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time out to do this. I really appreciate it. You know, I've been on this journey through this year, doing one a week for the whole year. And I'm getting towards the end of the year. I'm hoping to do one with Tommy. But you're up there in the top ones when they're like, who are the guys you're hoping to get done before? Dennis Buznitz is officially done, so I'm feeling really good about that. Appreciate it.
Right on.
Say hi to the kids and the fam. And Timo, this one's for you because you keep hitting me up with your fucking text messages telling me you need it live by 6 a.m. So this one is going to be at 6 a.m. for Timo. Love you, buddy.
What, you're dropping him early like that?
Drop it because he said he needs it for his commute drive. Yeah.
All right.
And special shout out goes to Box Cab Co.
Shout out.
You know who you are.
King of the airwaves, signing off.
Big love. Peace.
We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talkin' Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow up them charts. All the episodes will always remain free to my listeners, but if you'd like to help support the show, you can do so at our website, talkinschmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like stickers, beanies, t-shirts, or hats. The website has an entire archive of all the episodes with extra photos and video. You can also email me with any concerns, questions, suggestions, comments, etc. at talkinschmidt@gmail.com. That's talkinschmidt, talkinschmidt, @gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by me, Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature, and a special shout out goes to my executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it!
Until next week, this is Talkin' Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Talkin' Schmidt. Talkin' Schmidt. Talkin' Schmidt.